The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. A Texas community works to heal after a mass shooting at a church.
He loved his wife more than anything in the world.
President Trump tries to unite Asia against North Korea.
The future of this region and its beautiful people must not be held hostage to a dictator's twisted fantasies of violent conquest.
Alabama Republican Roy Moore accused of sexually abusing a child.
Some Republicans are already calling on him to step aside to give another GOP candidate a chance at winning.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. The church where a man opened fire, killing dozens, will be demolished. Vice President Mike Pence visited the small community of Sutherland Springs, Texas, Wednesday. More from correspondent Mark Strassman.
With a warm embrace, Vice President Mike Pence thanked Stephen Wilford, the man who shot at gunman Devin Kelly Sunday and interrupted his killing spree.
Standing in this place is very humbling to me. Every American has been inspired by the heroes of Sutherland Springs.
The vice president also promised to work with Congress to ensure that court-martials are properly reported. Kelly received a bad conduct discharge in 2014 after his conviction for domestic violence. That should have barred him from purchasing firearms, but the Air Force never told the FBI. Ronald Corrigan says he's angry with the Air Force.
There will be a day of reckoning, but it's not today.
Corrigan's brother Robert, a decorated 30-year Air Force veteran who served two tours in Afghanistan, was killed Sunday, along with his wife Shaney.
Shaney was a real inspiration. He loved his wife more than anything in the world.
Tori McCallum lost four family members.
I just find solace that they were all together.
Her sister-in-law, Crystal Holcomb, and three nieces and nephews, Emily, Megan, and Greg Hill.
There were just so many babies in there. Watching them take person after person out was so heartbreaking.
President Trump wrapping up his trip to Asia with a final stop in Manila, Philippines. In Da Nang, Vietnam, Mr. Trump met with his counterparts from across the region and shook hands with Russian President Vladimir Putin at the APEC summit there. CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy reports he once again pushed Asian leaders to unite to get tough with North Korea.
He urged business leaders in the region to help push back against North Korea's nuclear ambitions.
The future of this region and its beautiful people must not be held hostage to a dictator's twisted fantasies of violent conquest and nuclear blackmail.
The president also spoke trade, and again, as he did earlier in the week in China, blamed his predecessors, not other nations, for unfair deals.
From this day forward, we will compete on a fair and equal basis. We are not going to let the United States be taken advantage of anymore.
The president went on to say countries that abide by the rules of the World Trade Organization may partner with the U.S., and those that don't will no longer be tolerated. Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, traveling with the president in Da Nang, Vietnam.
President Trump had a similar message during visits to Beijing, Tokyo, and Seoul. Back in Washington, the House Ways and Means Committee has passed the GOP's tax reform bill, which may get a vote on the House floor in just days. It comes as Senate Republicans offer their own plan. Correspondent Mola Lenghi has details from Capitol Hill.
Senate Republicans are making their own revisions to a new tax reform plan.
In 30 years, America's ready for tax reform again, to get growing, again.
The Senate Finance Committee rolled out its bill Thursday, offering billions of dollars in tax cuts. It's similar to the GOP bill working its way around the House, but the Senate version creates 7 individual tax brackets instead of 4, fully eliminates the deduction for state and local taxes, preserves deductions for home mortgage interest and high medical expenses, and delays the reduction in the corporate tax rate from 35% to 20% until 2019.
If there is a focus on our tax reform package, it's to make sure that middle America, hard-working income earners, have a chance to see more money materialize in their paychecks.
Senate Republicans need nearly every party member to vote for this bill because Democrats don't support it.
When a party rolls out their number one legislative plan, there should be trumpets and bands. But the public knows already that the bill favors the wealthy.
On the other side of the Capitol, House Republicans made last-minute changes to their bill before sending it to the floor.
We're going to get this over the finish line. We're going to get this over the finish line because we need to get this done for American families.
If the full House and Senate pass these bills, a conference committee would meet to try and resolve the differences between the two versions. Mola Lenghi, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Alabama Republican Roy Moore is facing new allegations of sexual assault that allegedly happened decades ago. It comes a month before the special election to fill Jeff Sessions' Senate seat.
Judge Roy Moore stormed onto the political scene when he upset acting Senator Luther Strange in the Alabama race to fill Jeff Sessions' Senate seat.
It just come to light, and I've just read about him. It's very, very disturbing what I've read about.
Thursday, the Washington Post reported allegations from a woman who claims Moore made inappropriate advances and had sexual contact with her in 1979 when she was just 14. Moore denies the claims, calling it fake news. His campaign issued a statement saying, after over 40 years of public service, if any of these allegations were true, they would have been made public long before now. Moore faces his Democratic opponent December 12th, and some Republicans are already calling on him to step aside to give another GOP candidate a chance at winning.
I think if he does what he should do, does the right thing, and steps aside, I don't think it'll hurt the Republican Party.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell echoed those comments, saying Moore should step aside if the allegations are true. But Moore won the Republican primary this summer, in part by ditching the establishment.
Problem is, President Trump's being cut off in his office. He's being redirected by people like McConnell.
Moore currently has a double-digit lead in the polls over his Democratic opponent, former U.S. Attorney Doug Jones. Seth Lemon, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
We're taking our country back from Donald Trump one election at a time.
An enthusiastic DNC chair, Tom Perez, joined other Democrats still celebrating this weekend a wave of election victories Tuesday. Correspondent Nancy Cordes reports on the Democratic wins in governor's races in New Jersey and Virginia.
Phil Murphy was still marveling at his 13-point win in the New Jersey governor's race. In Virginia, Dr. Ralph Northam savored a 9-point win over Republican Ed Gillespie in a governor's race that was supposed to be close.
Virginia has told us to end the divisiveness.
Republicans on Capitol Hill took notice.
Our problem is our base is pretty unenthusiastic.
That's Republican Senator Lindsey Graham. Still to come, more allegations of sexual misconduct facing celebrities, including a well-known comedian.
We love women a lot. All men do. And we just look at you. That's what I do. I just look at women. I just, like they're, you know, cakes and windows. I just,
That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Comedian Louis C.K. also facing sexual misconduct accusations and apologizing in a statement Friday. More from correspondent Bill Rakoff.
These stories are true, says Louis C.K. in the statement, saying that he has been remorseful of his actions, but he's run from them as well. He said the power that he held over the 5 women who accused him of pleasuring himself in front of them or on the phone is that they admired him and that he wishes he would have reacted by being a better example. Louis C.K. goes on to say that he spent his career saying anything he wants. Now he will step back and take a long time to listen. Bill Rakoff, CBS News.
HBO and Netflix are moving to cut ties with him. The mother of one teenager says actor Kevin Spacey sexually assaulted him. Here's correspondent Jerika Duncan.
My son said to me,
Mom, Kevin Spacey tried to rape me.
Heather Unruh told reporters Wednesday her son was starstruck upon meeting Kevin Spacey at the Club Car restaurant on Nantucket last summer. She says her son alleges Spacey bought him drink after drink before sticking his hands down her son's pants.
My son's efforts to shift his body to remove Spacey's hand were only momentarily successful. The violation continued.
Unruh says her son claims when Spacey left the table, a concerned stranger came to her son's aid, telling him to run, and he did. With more than a dozen men publicly accusing Spacey of inappropriate conduct, Sony Pictures is now dropping the Oscar-winning actor from its upcoming film, All the Money in the World. CBS is also cutting Spacey from its 50th anniversary celebration of The Carol Burnett Show, airing next month. Mo Rocca asked Burnett about it.
Was that a difficult decision?
No. Our show is about looking back and having fun, and I don't want any controversy, and neither does CBS.
Witnesses say former Major League pitcher Roy Halladay flew his plane at a low altitude before he died when it crashed off the coast of Central Florida Tuesday.
He just crashed right here in the Gulf of Mexico.
Halladay owned the Icon A5 for less than a month, one of only 19 aircraft that the company has delivered to private owners since 2015.
I grew up around airplanes.
The former Major League pitcher starred in this Icon promotional video. Just 3 weeks before the deadly crash, the company issued new low-altitude guidelines that say flying 300 feet above ground level provides a reasonable margin for a pilot to make decisions and maneuver the aircraft.
What was he thinking?
Halliday's fatal accident is at least the third crash this year, calling into question the plane's safety record. An A5 crash near Key Largo in April, and later this spring, two Icon engineers were killed in a crash in Northern California. With a price tag that starts at some $270,000, the A5 is geared toward amateur pilots. A former FAA official said even though the plane is marketed as easy to fly, there are always risks in aviation.
When you start flying as close to the water as he was, a lot of bad things can happen very quickly.
Correspondent Tony DeCopel reporting. Sources tell CBS News the Department of Homeland Security has discovered potentially dangerous holes in the screening efforts the TSA is leading at the nation's airports. More from CBS News Homeland Security correspondent Jeff Pagase.
Sources say in tests, possibly over 70% of the time, explosives and weapons were able to get through checkpoints. Just 2 years ago, testing found a 95% failure rate. The House Homeland Security Committee received a classified briefing on the report. Here's what Chairman Michael McCaul said afterward.
We found that briefing disturbing.
An iconic aluminum bird took its last flight for United Airlines. The final flight Tuesday retraced the 747's first for United 47 years ago from San Francisco to Honolulu. More from CBS News transportation correspondent Chris Van Cleve.
You won't see a United Airlines 747 land ever again. In 1966, Pan Am asked Boeing for the biggest airliner ever. Starting from scratch and nearly bankrupting the company, Boeing's humpbacked double-decker jumbo jet made its first flight less than 3 years later. The 747 entered airline service in 1970 and was an instant sensation. Michael Lombardi is Boeing's historian.
Because of its size, because of its the economy, because of its range, it made flying affordable.
United flew its first 747 route in 1970 from San Francisco to Honolulu. That iconic hump once housed a fancy lounge for first-class flyers, up the spiral staircase, complete with a bar or even a piano. The 747's four engines carried the space shuttle across the country and five U.S. presidents around the world. Boeing has delivered more than 1,500 747s, but today the plane is less efficient than new two-engine airliners, leaving its days as a passenger plane numbered.
It's like your first true love.
Henry Hartevelt's first 747 flight was a family trip.
We're saying goodbye to a plane that is an icon of air travel and epitomized commercial flying when it frankly was a more gracious, more pleasant experience than it is for many today.
Delta, the only other U.S. carrier still flying the 747, will retire theirs by the end of the year. Chris Van Cleve, CBS News, San Francisco.
Three UCLA basketball players are being held in China for allegedly shoplifting.
UCLA basketball tweeted a photo of its freshman stars as they departed for China. But a trip that was supposed to be about sightseeing and basketball has taken an unpredicted turn. An ESPN report claims LiAngelo Ball, Cody Riley, and Jalen Hill were arrested in Hangzhou, accused of shoplifting from a Louis Vuitton store near the team's hotel. Ball is the brother of L.A. Lakers rookie Lonzo Ball.
Lonzo, have you talked to your brother yet?
No, I haven't talked to any of them yet. I know they're all over there in China, you know, taking care of it, so I'll talk to them when they get back.
Let me tell you something.
Their dad, LeVar Ball, is the outspoken advocate of his high-profile basketball family and has appeared with his sons in a reality TV show. He is traveling with the team in China.
It'll be fine. Everybody making it a big deal. It ain't that big of a deal.
The Bruins are scheduled to play their home opener next Wednesday here at Pauley Pavilion, but at this point, it's unclear whether the three players involved will be back.
According to China's entry and exit law, a case must be fully resolved before the suspects are allowed to eventually go home.
Students we spoke with on the UCLA campus are surprised at the allegations and the attention they are getting.
I think, like, the whole arrest and, like, the publicity around it is excessive.
The Ball family's got a big name, and of course it's going to attract a lot of attention because it is the Ball family.
UCLA says the players will not play in this weekend's game in Shanghai. They are reportedly out on bail, but confined to their hotel until the legal process plays out. Danielle Nottingham, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Researchers who studied the brain of former New England Patriots player Aaron Hernandez say he suffered severe brain damage from a degenerative disease linked to head blows. Director of Boston University's CTE Center, Dr. Ann McKee.
This would be the first case we've ever seen of that kind of damage in such a young individual.
Hernandez hanged himself in prison after he was acquitted in the 2012 shootings of two men in Boston. Up next, new restrictions for Americans traveling to Cuba on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Holiday business gifting season is fast approaching. This year, choose gifts that are simple to give and a joy to get. Choose Omaha Steaks. There's a huge variety, from premium steaks to skillet meals. There's free shipping on most packages, and all gifts are 100% guaranteed. Be confident in your gift choice. You can never start too early. Contact Omaha Steaks today. Enjoy special holiday pricing on the perfect business gift. It's an ideal holiday gift for your clients, employees, or partners. The perfect business gift includes 4 bacon-wrapped tri-tip steaks, 4 Omaha Steak burgers, 4 gourmet franks, 2 boneless pork chops, 4 kielbasa sausages, 4 free caramel apple tartlets, plus you'll get free shipping. This exclusive holiday gift package is only $59.99. Go to omahasteaks.com, type nation in the search bar, and choose the perfect business gift. Again, visit omahasteaks.com and enter code nation in the search bar to send or experience this exclusive gift package for only $59.99. And it ships free.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. The former CEOs of Yahoo and Equifax apologized to Capitol Hill lawmakers as they faced questions about the massive data breach set their companies.
My experiences from Yahoo and
Google. The former heads of Equifax and Yahoo apologized for the massive consumer data breaches that happened on their watch.
I want to sincerely apologize to each and every one of our users.
Apologize deeply the American public for the breach that we had.
The Equifax breach exposed personal information of 145 million Americans earlier this year, and a hack against Yahoo in 2013 affected all of its 3 billion user accounts.
Even robust defenses and processes are not sufficient to protect against a state-sponsored attack.
But hackers exploited human and technological errors at Equifax, and lawmakers pressed the current CEO on new cybersecurity measures.
You spend 50% more today than you did before?
Easily.
75, 100, yeah. 100, 200% more?
4 times more.
Lawmakers and all the witnesses agreed that protecting personal information online is a moving target. Weijia Jiang, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
The U.S. is placing new restrictions on Americans traveling to Cuba and doing business there. The restrictions make it harder for Americans to do business in Cuba and travel there independently, something that's fueled U.S. air travel to the island. John Kavalich heads up the New York-based U.S.-Cuba Trade and Economic Council.
The entities that will gain the most are the cruise lines, because they
are experts at dealing with groups.
A senior administration official says the new rules don't have anything to do with acoustic attacks affecting U.S. government employees in Havana. FEMA is offering to relocate folks in Puerto Rico to the mainland U.S.
Glenda Bonilla Colon is desperate to leave this island. She's been in this shelter for more than 40 days.
I don't want to stay anymore here.
74-year-old Elsie Ortiz's home was heavily damaged by Hurricane Maria.
This is my house. All the glass went inside the house or the water.
She, too, has been here a little over a month. She's been approached by FEMA with a chance to make her way to Fort Lauderdale while her home is being repaired.
And they're going to pay for you to come back?
Yes. Going and coming and the 15 days in the hotel. But after that, everything else is on me.
In most natural disasters, FEMA will pay for hotel rooms for long-term displaced victims. But there aren't enough hotels on the island, prompting FEMA to come up with an airlift solution. Mike Byrne is FEMA's federal coordinating officer here on the island.
We have to take the time to both set it up, because the last thing we want to do is put people on a plane, have them arrive at an airport, and not have the wraparound services to help take care of them.
Byrne says so far the program has yet to gain momentum. Out of 300 families interviewed 48 hours ago, only 30, he says, showed interest. Edeline has been at the shelter with her two kids for 3 weeks. She's one of those not sure about going to the mainland. She says she has no money to support them if they go.
You feel safer here, even though you're in a shelter?
Right now, yes.
FEMA says this is the first time they've done this, actually airlift evacuees out of a disaster zone in order to get them into a hotel room. And it's not mandatory. FEMA's actually going around to different shelters like this one and asking people if they want to be a part of the program. And of the handful of folks we talked to, nearly everyone said, "We cannot wait to get out of here." David Begno, CBS News, San Juan, Puerto Rico.
The Pope taking a stand against cell phones in church.
Pope Francis knows how to draw a crowd, and it's usually full of people snapping photos with their cell phones. The scene got his attention during a mass at the Vatican Wednesday. In off-the-cuff remarks, the Pope chastised pilgrims, priests, and even bishops, saying it's a very ugly thing to use phones during such a sacred time, and that mass is not a show. Francis said the faithful should be lifting up their hearts, not their phones. Shortly after his election in 2013, Pope Francis said it hurt him to see priests driving flashy cars and desperate to use the latest smartphone. The Pope rides in a simple Ford Focus and has not been seen using a cell phone in public since becoming leader of the world's Catholics. The 80-year-old is no stranger to social media. He tweets in 9 languages to more than 40 million followers. Pope Francis has called the internet and text messages a gift from God, if used wisely. But he's also urged people to swap their smartphones for pocket-sized Bibles. Terry Okita, CBS News.
Veterans Affairs Secretary David Shulkin tells CBS This Morning's Nora O'Donnell his department still has a long way to go to get all the veterans the care they need sooner.
You were the undersecretary of health at the VA when Trump was running for president, and he called the VA a broken system, a disaster. What changed his perspective of the VA?
You know, I don't disagree with the president. This is a system that has lots of problems, and you have to recognize and acknowledge the problems if you're going to fix them.
For years, the VA has struggled to modernize and to overcome fallout from a massive waitlist scandal in which dozens of veterans died waiting for care.
After everything that's happened, and after Congress approving $10 billion so that veterans can go outside the system to get care, why is the number of veterans waiting more than 30 days bigger than it was 3 years ago?
First of all, we've increased the number of appointments by several million appointments since 2014. So what you're seeing is a system that's experiencing tremendous demand for its services.
This is because of all of the veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah. One of the things most Americans don't understand is that when you send men and women off to war, it sometimes takes decades before you see the impact of that demand.
That $10 billion choice program is set to expire. What do you need now?
We need Congress to work to make sure that the choice program is a permanent part of a program that supports veterans going on in the future. Otherwise, we risk running out of money and putting veterans back into the type of waitlist situation that we saw many years ago.
You guys getting good care?
It's a scenario Shulkin seems determined to avoid. A trained physician, he continues to see patients at the VA, hoping to restore them and their system to good health.
There have been reports that you've been interviewed for the Health and Human Secretary's job. Would you take that job?
First of all, those reports aren't true. I've not been interviewed. I am committed to finishing the job that I started. That's where I want to be. Of course, I serve at the pleasure of the president.
He asked you to serve as HHS secretary.
I think anybody who serves the president is there to serve the country. And of course, we would do what the president wants us to do. But the president knows, he and I have discussed, that I feel committed to the Veterans Administration and that I feel that we're making great progress, and I don't want to interrupt that.
Nora O'Donnell with VA Secretary David Shulkin. Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, America's top bathrooms.
At the Odyssey Aquarium in Scottsdale, Arizona, you watch sharks go by as you wash your hands.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio. And I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. The Russia probe may be closing in on ousted National Security Advisor Michael Flynn and his son.
Special Counsel Robert Mueller is reportedly looking into a plan that would have paid Mike Flynn and his son as much as $15 million for a covert operation to return a fugitive cleric living in the U.S. Turkey's president wants Fethullah Gulen extradited as a terrorist and for allegedly planning a failed coup. The Wall Street Journal reports Flynn met with Turkish officials before and after the election last year to talk about it. Flynn once lobbied for Turkish interests. Peter King, CBS News.
On Tuesday, Russian communists in Moscow, as few as they are these days, marched to mark the 100th anniversary of the October Revolution, the Bolshevik uprising that gave birth to the Soviet Union and to communism, something that still lingers in several parts of the world today. 40 years later, a young grad student, part of the U.S. diplomatic mission, Marvin Kalb, would observe firsthand another year that would forecast sweeping change in the Soviet Union. He writes about it in his new book, The Year I Was Peter the Great, 1956, Khrushchev, Stalin's Ghost, and a Young American in Russia. You were also a former CBS News diplomatic correspondent. What do you make these days, then, of what Russia is going through and how it's changed?
Putin is an autocratic leader, very much in an old Russian tradition. What I was describing in the book in 1956 was something that was very new. You had Nikita Khrushchev as the leader of the Communist Party denouncing Stalin, introducing a whiff of freedom in the Russian people who had never had any of that in their lives. And suddenly they were intoxicated by the idea that they could make up their own minds about something. That didn't go too far, but it went far enough to send an exciting chill through the entire Soviet Union and even into the Soviet Empire in Eastern Europe, and it ultimately got crushed in the Hungarian Revolution in November of 1956. But while it lasted, it was magnificent.
What could you see happening that would forecast more trouble ahead for the Soviet Union?
When you experiment in a dictatorship, when you are experimenting with as volatile a concept as freedom, personal freedom, you realize that you may be signing your own death warrant. And Khrushchev was very well aware of that in 1956. You can play with freedom only up to a point, and then it takes over. And what he did not want to happen was to allow freedom to take over. He wanted to retain a communist system. And this is the same kind of problem that Putin faces today. He believes that if he retains total control over the system, he's going to retain his own job, but also retain the structure that he has set up, which is a kleptocratic operation. It's an autocratic operation. It is in many ways consistent with Russian tradition. But back in 56, there was, for that moment, that precious moment, when freedom seemed possible until Khrushchev felt he had to extinguish it.
We've talked about the past. We've talked about the president. If we were to peer into Russia's future, what do you imagine we would see then?
That's one of those questions that people have been peering into for a very long time. we end up in two groups. There is one group that feels that the Russian people are a literate people, an intelligent people. They know what is going on, and one day they will rise up as Khrushchev tried to do it in 56 and Gorbachev in the 1980s. They will rise up and truly establish their power over an autocratic system, and there will be a form of democracy. I truly believe that. However, there are a lot of other people who may be absolutely right that Russia simply lives more comfortably in an authoritarian environment, an autocratic government, a government like Putin's, rather than a government like Khrushchev's. And so at this point, when I look back to that period in 1956, the reason it is such an exciting year to think back upon now, to read about now, is that there was a precious moment in Russian history in the not too distant past when the Russians smelled freedom and really let the rest of the world know that it was something that they cherished.
An optimistic but pragmatic, perhaps, Marvin Kalb, author of The Year I Was Peter the Great and former CBS News diplomatic correspondent on the Weekend Roundup. Thanks, Marvin.
Thank you.
New warnings about the light from many electronics and light bulbs.
Edward Takacz has trouble falling asleep and staying asleep, so he's made big changes at home.
It's just become regular routine.
His television, tablet, and computer are set up so he sees warmer colors from dusk to dawn. And so is the lighting in his home. He's trying to block blue light from electronics and energy-efficient light bulbs at night.
It does help me personally as a sleep patient feel more ready for sleep and get to sleep a lot easier.
Dr. Charles Seisler of Brigham and Women's Hospital has been studying blue light for years. He says exposure at night throws off the body's biological clock and suppresses the release of the sleep hormone melatonin.
We've done studies showing if we read, for example, from an iPad in the few hours before bedtime, that resets our circadian clock by about an hour and a half later.
There's also evidence that exposure to blue light at night may not just affect sleep.
Shifting our circadian rhythms repeatedly has been associated with increased risk of various types of cancer, including colorectal cancer, breast cancer, and prostate cancer.
His best advice, if you work nights or use a lot of devices at night, use apps or settings like Edward does. Most importantly, avoid bright screens 2 to 3 hours before bed.
On the nights where I'm really compliant, yes, it does help significantly. On nights where you're not compliant, you really can feel it.
And that's why Edward chooses to pick up an actual book before bed. Dr. Malika Marshall, CBS News, Boston.
Searching for relief.
Donut plant inside the historic Chelsea Hotel is known for its handmade donuts, but going in the restroom is also a treat. The tiny room is modeled after a disco.
It's not the largest bathroom, but I think it makes up for it with personality.
The bathroom is just one of the 10 nominated for America's Best Restroom. At the Odyssey Aquarium in Scottsdale, Arizona, you watch sharks go by as you wash your hands. The Palmetto Brewery in Charleston, South Carolina has urinals made out of recycled kegs. The contest is sponsored by Cintas, a company specializing in supplies and cleaning services.
Very popular.
Jay Schneider is co-owner of Elsa. The bathroom at his Brooklyn bar has mirrored slats and an arched ceiling. Elsa and its restroom rivals were all selected based on innovation, functionality, and unique designs.
Mostly we know it's special just because of the sheer number of people who have taken selfies in there and then posted on Instagram. There's hundreds and hundreds of them.
Anna Doba, CBS News, New York.
Coming up, the co-founders of the popular retailer LuLaRoe defend the company amid a $1 billion lawsuit against it.
We have a multi-billion dollar business. It was not built by tricking people into giving us their money.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
CBS News Radio podcasts are now on Spotify. Listen to great shows like Face the Nation, the CBS News Weekend Roundup, CBS This Morning, and more. They're all from your Spotify app on your iOS or Android device. CBS News Radio on Spotify, the leading global music streaming service, now lets you find the right podcast for every moment.
Open Spotify to listen to CBS News Radio podcasts today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. The co-founders of popular clothing retailer LuLaRoe were speaking out about recent allegations against the company, claiming it's a pyramid scheme as it faces a $1 billion lawsuit. Correspondent Anna Werner has the story.
We have a multi-billion dollar business. It was not built by tricking people into giving us their money.
To hear LuLaRoe co-founders Mark and Deanne Stidham tell it, their story is one of a successful family-run business built on hard work and creativity.
We have a clothing line that people love. They love its comfort. They love its versatility. They love the fashion.
That clothing line began with Deanne Stidham's handmade creations and grew to become a business they say has had over $2 billion in sales so far this year. Made through a network of some 80,000 independent sellers or consultants who sell online or through home parties, much as Stidham herself first did.
And I often say, LuLaRoe works for you, you don't work for LuLaRoe. That means you get to decide on your time and you get to decide what works best for you.
It is insane. You will be able to have a full-time income. And it's life-changing.
Online, some consultants say they've made good money.
We've done just a little bit over 200,000 in sales for this last year.
You get the product, you put it before people, and you sell it, and you have money. And that's the simplicity of this business, and that's as easy as it can be.
LuLaRoe's approach, what's called multi-level marketing. Retailers buy in with a minimum purchase, in LuLaRoe's case about $5,000, then sell to customers at a markup. They can also make money by recruiting other sellers to join their team and make bonuses off those retailers' sales. The company points to success stories like the consultant they introduced us to in California, Misty El Sasser.
Hi. How you guys doing? Thank you so
El Sasser
much.
Started 3 years ago when there were just 700 sellers nationwide and now has more than 11,000 members in her Facebook group.
I love LuLaRoe. I wear it every single day.
She says her profits are upwards of $3,000 a month.
For me, I really focus on what's important for our family and for my business.
And you've been able to pay your mortgage with this.
Yes.
It all sounded good to Chicago area stay-at-home mom Susan Council, who says a recruiter told her,
it's very minimal part-time work for full-time income. You'd have lots of time, you know, extra money for, you know, to do whatever you want with your family.
So Council says she invested around $11,000, but despite working more than full-time hours, says she couldn't make it work, and now is still over $4,000 in debt.
I feel like I failed my family. I put my family into debt to do something that ended up not being what they preach.
And she's not the only one complaining. A recently filed lawsuit seeking $1 billion claims tens of thousands of other consultants never even made a profit because LuLaRoe, they allege, is a pyramid scheme that only profited a few and only made payments to consultants based on how much product those consultants and their recruits purchased on a regular basis.
What that is an uneducated opinion. They haven't looked at who we are because we sell product through to a consumer. And it's highly desirable product. That is not a pyramid scheme.
Shouldn't they think it's easy?
No, I think it's easy. That's me. Okay, for me, in my background and my life experience, I do not say it's easy for
everyone.
But
here's the thing. Mm-mm. Some consultants say they were told this is easy.
That's what I think they heard, and it's not the truth.
But they did say that while more than half of LuLaRoe's sellers, some 40,000, make $1,000 or more per month, a small group at the top pulls in $500,000 or more per year in bonuses made off the sellers below them. And Douglas Brooks, an attorney who has sued other multi-level marketing companies, says...
For the vast majority of people that get into a company like this, they're going to be lucky if they break even.
These women are out there saying, look, it's a con, it's a scam, it's a pyramid scheme, don't do it. What do you think is happening to those retailers?
I will tell you that we have been incredibly disruptive in the marketplace, and I don't think that those are all entirely organic complaints.
You think somebody's putting them up to it?
My personal belief is that yes.
Anna Werner reporting. This weekend, 48 Hours correspondent Aaron Moriarty investigates whether a true crime TV show affected An Atlanta detective's investigation of an alleged murder and rape. Aaron, first tell us about the case and the TV series Inside Homicide.
Well, this is a case that raises serious questions about pretrial publicity and the ability to get a fair trial. And here's what happened. So on September 13, 2013, a woman calls into 911 and said that she was raped and that she shot her rapist. She did not know that the lead detective, who would then show up an hour later at her house, was being trailed by these camera people from a show called Inside Homicide. They never told her this was being taped. She didn't even find out until a year afterwards and before her trial. This wasn't just a case of details being released before a trial, but inaccurate details, misleading details. And the fear was that it could color the view of jurors who would then end up deciding her fate. Right before trial, the prosecution asked the jurors whether anyone had seen it, and they all said they had not. But in this day and age, when everything lives on forever on the internet, this show still existed there, the information still existed there. And so it raises a lot of questions in this day and age of what can you talk about a trial? Can you get a fair trial if there is information, particularly inaccurate information, out there?
Aaron, you also talked to the parents of this murder victim, William Carter Jr. What did they have to say?
Well, this is, and that's a very different part of this whole show. It's a he said, she said. This was a very tumultuous, troubled relationship. Both members of this couple, both Victoria Rickman, the defendant, and the victim, William Carter Jr., had charges brought against them for assaulting each other. And that's why, again, this pretrial publicity is so important, because when you have a case that is so contested and it really comes down to credibility of witnesses, any kind of error before a trial could affect the way someone looks at it.
48 Hours correspondent Erin Moriarty on her investigation, Reality Kills, airing this weekend and streaming on CBS All Access. Thanks, Erin.
Thanks so much, Steve.
That does it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. We want to get your feedback. Send us your story ideas, chain letters, love letters, whatever, to weekendroundup@cbsnews.com. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and now Spotify. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Dory Valerio is the production assistant in New York. Alyssa Rashaw is our intern. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.